Hello, and welcome to Marathon Swim Stories, where we connect with marathon swimmers around the world to find out how they got started, what makes them tick, and why they keep going. It's where we explore the human side of the superhuman feats of endurance swimmers, the connections that we have with each other, our support crew, and the waters we cross. If you've ever stood at the edge of a body of water and wondered what it would be like to swim to the other side, you're in good company. I'm Shannon Keegan, marathon swimmer, water relationship coach, and founder of Intrepid Water, where I virtually teach swimming freedom. Freedom to get started, shed the confines of the pool, or your preconceived notions of what's possible. Find out more at intrepidwater.com. A natural-born storyteller, Antonio Arjuelles, doesn't waste a moment. He jumps straight into the story of how he got started swimming in cold water in his grandfather's oddly shaped pool, why swimming is his medicine, the familiar dream of wanting to be an Olympic champion, and how the tides turned and he became the seventh person to complete the Ocean's Seven. If you haven't read it yet, be sure to pick up a copy of his book, The Forever Swim. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Antonio. I'm here today with Antonio. I was practicing with my husband last night, so let me see how I can do. Oh, no, I'm not going to do well. Tell me your last name. You pronounce it right. I don't want to butcher it.
Okay, but my name is Antonio Arguelles.
Arguelles.
I'm from Mexico. And I have been a swimmer since a little kid, very little kid. I learned to swim when I was about 3 years old. And I guess I started open water swimming, or at least the cold part of open water swimming. Because my grandfather had a pool in his house in a town south of Mexico City called Cuernavaca. And Cuernavaca is between Mexico City and the two big volcanoes in Mexico, Popocatépetl and Isla Cihuatl. So in those days, I don't know if it happens today, but in those days, the water in Cuernavaca came from the volcanoes. So it was very cold water. And I don't understand my grandfather, because he went to all the trouble to have heat installed in the pool. And it was a very odd pool, 17 meters. I never understood why 17 meters, because it could have been 15 or 20 or 25. No, but he said 17. And the other thing was 3 meter deep. So it was another thing that it was, why do you have a pool so deep? But anyway, that's where I started. And I was probably the only one in the family, along with my brother sometimes and my father, who was willing to swim in that cold water. So that's where I started. And, you know, I don't know if any of your other guests have said, but for me, swimming has been the greatest medicine that I've had. Because I'm hyperactive. And right now, I'm 63 years old. And when I was a little kid, I went to a school, the German school in Mexico, a very strict school. And I don't know why my parents sent me there, because, you know, we have zero German descendancy. And so I went there, and I was always getting in trouble because I didn't sit down, and I was running, and I got into fights because I was chubby, and everybody was telling me that I was a chubby, and I was big. So I was getting in trouble and almost expelled from school. And then the 68 Olympics came, and we had the Olympics in Mexico City. And we had our first gold medal in the 200-meter breaststroke. And when I watched that on TV, we didn't have TV in the house. My father was convinced that if I saw TV, we would become dumb. So I had to run into my grandmother's house to watch TV. And when I saw Felipe Tibio Muñoz win the medal, I said, that's what I want to do in my life. I want to go to the Olympics and win a gold medal. And that became my obsession. So swimming up to today has given me the ability to survive in terms of being hyperactive and having swimming. And then I'll tell you more about all the sports that I've done. But that's how I started swimming. And also, when I think about swimming, it has different things that swimming has given me, not only this medical part or physical part, but also it gave me my opportunity to start my first business. When I was 14 years old, I met the president of Speedo International, Mr. William M. Lee, William Moses Lee. And I started selling goggles, swim caps, and swimsuits in Mexico. And at the 76 Olympics in Montreal, I didn't make the team, you know, barely missed it, but I went there anyway. I asked Mr. Lee, I said, Mr. Lee, why don't you, who know, you know all the coaches in the States, the best coaches, get me a summer internship in one of those teams in with Richard Quick or Kip Skinny. You know, I wanted to swim them in Texas. And he said, no, Antonio, that's not a good idea. You should come and live with us in Los Altos, California. I've talked to Shirley. Shirley was his wife. I've talked to Shirley, and we both agree that at some point, Mexico and the United States will have to have a much closer relationship. And, you know, he was thinking of the North America Free Trade Agreement, probably. And it would be very good for you and for your country that you learn the American way of life. So imagine coming back from Montreal and telling my parents, I'm going to live in the States, and I'm leaving in 2 weeks. And so I flew to California. Have you ever been in the Bay Area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, 101, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You land in San Francisco. In those days, it wasn't a direct flight. You land in San Francisco, and then we went from 101 all the way to Los Altos. And I couldn't understand Mr. Lee, all the things he was saying. He was speaking so fast that I said, oh, my God. I mean, here I am, and what are we going to do? And when I arrived at his house, I realized that it was not me. It was him speaking too fast. And that's how I started being in the States and going to high school there. Many experiences as a foreigner in an American high school. First of all, everybody thought that I was a great water polo player. So I was a good swimmer, but I never played water polo. So can you imagine? My first day in high school was water polo practice. I never had a ball in my hand. I mean, that was horrible. I mean, horrible. But water polo was good for me because one day I told Shirley, I said, now I know and understand English because I can swear and play water polo at the same time. And those were the days of Mark Schubert and the long distance swimmers. We had to do 20,000 meters a day. I mean, 10 100s in the morning and 10 100s in the afternoon, and that's what you have. And then 7 days a week. So the only thing I was doing is sleeping, eating, and swimming. And I made it through college. I finally got into Stanford, and I swam there I tried to swim the first year in the team. And that's the correct way to put it. And I was good enough to lead the fastest women's lane, but I wasn't good enough to make it with the fast men.
Mm.
So I don't know if you ever heard of Joe Harshbarger. Joe was the world record holder in the 1500 meter.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Payton, who was part of the Olympic team that won the gold medal in Montreal, and Vary Lili, the 200 meter ex-world record and best American, the 200 butterfly. So these three women are behind me all the time. And they are bugging me every single day until after about 3 or 4 months, I think it was the late October, beginning of November, we had to do 10 800s, warm up, 10 800s. And about the fourth or the fifth 800, I wasn't feeling well. And they were putting my feet like this all the time. So I finished, I get the fourth or the fifth, I cut out the pool, and I told Jim Gordon, Jim, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm not swimming anymore.
Mm.
And I quit swimming.
Wow.
And I started running.
Oh, wow. Big change.
And I've done 10 marathons. But at those days, triathlon was starting. And Speedo was one of the big sponsors of triathlon.
Are you still doing your Speedo on the side here this whole since you were 14?
No, you know what happened with the company? I was a distributor for many years, and then Speedo was sold to Warnaco, and they decided they was going to, with NAFTA, they started doing many of the swimsuits here in Mexico, and they became a very big company. But part of what we did was printing caps. And instead of closing the shop, we gave it to our employees. So one of the things that you will always see me is that I always have different caps. And I was giving caps away to my friends. And if you can send me your logo, as a matter of fact, if you have a logo for your Lake Ness swim, I'll make the caps for you. It will be a gift of mine. And no. Now, you know, I don't know how many years later, now that I'm doing Morton, and I came up with the idea to doing an app, a swimming app for open water swimming. I'm going back to do sports-related business. And just to finish the speedo part and the triathlon. So I started triathlon in Mexico, and I was part of the team that got triathlon to be an Olympic sport.
So you went back to Mexico after college?
Yeah, after college, I came back to Mexico and started working for the government, and I spent many years in the government. And when I was turning 40, I wanted to go to Everest. I hadn't been swimming for almost 20 years, and I wanted to go to Everest. So I told my family, Lucia, Jimena, David, that I was going to go to Everest. And they said, if you want to kill yourself here in Mexico. Because if you die over there, we won't be able to bring even your body. So it was a big crisis in the family. So I decided I was still going to put them into that dilemma. And so I said, well, if I cannot do Mount Everest, what would be something that I could probably try? And I had already done an Ironman, so that was not a good idea. And I decided to go back swimming. And I swam for the first time the English Channel when I was 40 in 18 hours and 19 minutes.
Can you take us there for a minute? What was it like?
Well, you know, it was one of those things that is, if it was a class, it would be everything you need to learn at a very fast pace that is going to help you for the rest of your swimming career.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is going out at night. I had to prepare myself to start early, but we started at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't think I was going to be able to follow the boat. I was very, very concerned about that. And so my coach had a lamp, and we had trained with a lamp in Mexico in the lakes, but never on a boat with a very, very tough sea. So imagine following the light up and down, up and down, up and down. I started throwing up at about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Very, very, very bad. Then I hadn't been able to go to the bathroom. So I had to, you know, I was with the cold water, my body was shrinking, and I felt a lot of cramps in my stomach. So that was bad. I vomited I don't know how many times. And things got better when the sun came up and I stopped vomiting. But when we were about 10 hours off or 11 hours off, they told me, you're not even halfway. And we're thinking about taking you out. And I said, no way. I was trying to do back and forth. So I had trained for at least 24 hours. I said, no, I'm going to keep on swimming. And it was really complicated. I was the only one who finished that day. It was really complicated. A lot of waves, a lot of wind. And as we were getting close to the French coast, they told me, I mean, if you don't put the next hour at 100%, you're going to miss the landing spot. And that would take another 3 to 4 hours. So imagine after 18 or 16 and a half hours, you have to go all what you have to the rest. And in the book, you'll see a picture, because I always make, you know, in my generation, one of the movies that was an emblem was Rocky, you know, he goes up the stairs and goes,
yeah, yeah.
He's celebrating, you know. So I thought I was going to finish my English Channel. I would do the same thing. I couldn't get up. I just barely was able to get out of the water. I was on my four like that. And then I finished. And I got a call from a friend of mine who is a reporter. And they wanted to do an interview. And he said, well, I'm very happy that you beat the English Channel. And I told him, well, I'm looking at the English Channel, and he doesn't look beat it. I mean,
yeah.
Was beat it? It's myself. I had done before, I had done Catalina, and I had done Manhattan. So with that,
the English Channel?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Catalina and Manhattan are, in relative terms,
relative.
You know, Manhattan is, have you done Manhattan?
I have not. No, but the title assist, it, you zip around, right?
Yeah. Manhattan is just is the entry into a long distance swimming, but no problem. I was the seventh for many, many years. And one day, Steven Munatones told me, well, we missed somebody, so now you're number eight. So I was the eighth person to finish, the seventh or eighth person to finish the Triple Crown.
Wow.
And I said, I'm done. I'm done the Triple Crown. I finish. I'm going to go do some other things. And I went back to triathlon. I've done five Ironmans and running marathons. And when I was going to turn 50, a friend of mine invited, the wife of a friend of mine had a surprise party for my friend. So we went to the party and they had a film. And my friend was bald and chubby when he was a little baby. And at 50, he's bald and chubby. So, you know, I told Lucia and my children that I did not want to have a surprise party, did not even think about it, that I wanted to do the Triple Crown in one season.
Mm.
At that time, nobody had done the Triple Crown in one season. So I started training again, swimming, going back to swimming. And I wasn't the first one. There were two persons before me. But I was the third one to finish the Triple Crown in one season. And I was the first one to do it twice. So I did it twice. I got a prize here in Mexico, the national sports prize. And when I landed in England, I said, no more swimming for me. No more
swimming. How many times have you quit?
Only shortly. And I said, now I want to go to Everest. So I go back to my wife and my children. And they said, look, I mean, you are old enough. You want to do whatever you want, you know, forget. And I started training to go to Everest. And I broke my leg.
Oh, no.
25 centimeters in my femur.
Oh, my God.
So imagine a hyperactive person, 3 months in stretchers, and I couldn't do. I did everything that I could do without being half disabled. And I was swimming in the club. So I told the doctor, I mean, I need to go back to the pool. And so after the eighth week, he said, well, if you promise not to do flip turns or to use your leg, you'll be able to go to swim. Have you seen when the whales land on the sand and they cannot move the whales at you like that? Because I was getting out of the water, and you can't use your feet. You have to go and see, get the stretchers, and
beat yourself.
So I'm laying down there in the pool, and a friend of mine comes and tells me, "Gee, you look really, really bad." And I said, "What? Yeah, Antonio, you're just too old now." I was about 43 or 44. So no, you're done. You should think about doing other things. And he said, well, but the best part of it is that you won't be the first Mexican to finish Ocean 7. Somebody's going to beat you to that. And I said, what is Ocean 7? Well, it's this new thing that Steven Munatones came up with, which is the seven oceans. And I'm a very competitive person. I said, I'm not going to take this crap. So I went home and looked it up. And I said, well, I already have two. I thought three, but no, Manhattan is not in the Ocean 7. I already have two. So I went and meditated about it. And I said, if I can go back and do two marathons and do one of them under 6 minutes per kilometer, I will be ready. So I started training for the New York Marathon and then the Chicago Marathon. And I was able to get to the point at the Chicago Marathon.
Wow.
The reason why I did that is if you really train for a marathon, there's nothing more painful than training for a marathon and running a marathon at your full blast. It's really painful. So I said, if I still have the capacity and the concentration and the threshold for that kind of pain, I can go back in the world.
Have you ever wondered what happens in your body and your brain when you swim? Check out my new podcast, At the Interface, an invitation to non-swimmers and swimmers alike to explore what happens physically, emotionally, psychologically, and physiologically when we operate at the interface of air and water.
So I did it. And so I went and told my coach at that time, was Nora Toledano, just interview her. She's very good. Nora Toledano, she's one of the few people in the world who has done the English Channel back and forth. And she's the coach of many of the swimmers in Mexico that have crossed the English Channel, and Catalina and Manhattan. She's the coach of Abby.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Yeah.
So I went to Nora. I said, look, I mean, I want to do this. And she said, you really want to do that? Yes. Yeah, I think I can get back in swimming shape. So I wasn't in shape, but in swimming shape. It's very different to be shape in land than be shape in the water.
That's very true. Yes.
Very different. I mean, very different. So I started training. And the thing that everybody asked me, and this is when you read the book, that's when, you know, where the book starts. Everybody asked me, Antonio, when I just said I was going to do the Seven Oceans, I got inducted into the Swimming Hall of Fame. So everybody said, well, Antonio, you're already in the Swimming Hall of Fame. You've done twice, man, to the Triple Crown. You're national prize of sports. Why do you do this? And this is something that I say to people in my talks and in the book. There's no time in life for not having dreams and willing to achieve things. And in my case, I had this big desire that I wanted to do Ocean 7. And the question was, at that time, only six swimmers had done it, three women and three men. And all of them were under 40 years old. So when I'm saying I'm going to do this, I think I was 56 or something like that. So the question is, not only are you trying to do something that's very complicated, but you are like almost 20 years older than the average age of the people who have done it. I said, I will do it. I have no problem with it. So I did the first one. I did Gibraltar. You know, what I did is I went the easiest one, easy, warm, to cold. And I did Gibraltar. That's an easy one. Very demanded now. Open water swimming in the last 5-6 years, especially when the pandemic has gone. I'm part of the board of WOSA. And I tell Stephen and Quinn that the same thing that I saw with triathlon when we started triathlon 30 years ago, is what I'm seeing in open water swimming. More people want to do open water swimming. And the demand for Ocean 7 and for Manhattan, I mean, just think, Manhattan was only, to get into Manhattan in the early days, it was as complicated as doing a college application. You had to write an essay. Oh, yeah, it was really, because it only has one day. It was only one day.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was only one day. Now they're doing a great job in Manhattan. Rondi and Alex and Barra, they're doing a great job. But anyway, I started with Gibraltar, and then all of the other ones followed. And one thing that's important for your audience, that I'm very happy that they allowed me to get into their homes, is that every ocean gave me a lesson. And this is something that is really important, because you already have the book in your hands. The story of the cover is an amazing, and I won't go into that because not part of the program. But what I really want is to show how small men, human beings, men, women, are in relationship with nature. And you see how small I am in the cover of the book. The book name is The Forever Swim, if you want to get it. It's in Amazon. It's a great read. You will enjoy it.
Absolutely. I'm just getting started, but I love it so far.
The cover is just me in the middle of the ocean, and I see I'm very tiny. And that's how we human beings are when we're in the ocean. So Gibraltar taught me about how unpredictable life is, because I had a window that started a week after I would arrive in Tarifa. And the captain wrote me and said, look, I mean, the weather looks really, really, really bad. So don't make even the effort to come, because I don't think you're going to be able to go out in the next 2 weeks. And I was already had the plane tickets and everything. So I went. And after 32 hours, I arrive in Tarifa and I find a post-it with the next message. I have good news and bad news. The good news is that you're going to be swimming tomorrow. The bad news is that you need to be there at 9 o'clock This is 6 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, gosh.
So I would never have thought that I was going to be able to swim. And think about COVID. Unpredictable. Life is unpredictable. Well, the ocean is unpredictable. So I didn't finish. Then after that, we went to Japan. But I injured my shoulder during Gibraltar. And when I arrived in Japan, I had all bandage. And about 2 hours before swimming, Jimena, my daughter, sent me a message, said, "Dad, it's probably the first time that you would not be able to finish a swim. But I want to tell you that you will always be my hero." And this is a great moment in my swimming career, because I stopped thinking about ending in the other side and saying, I want to enjoy the swim. Wherever time I can be in the water, I'm going to enjoy every single moment, because it's going to be very complicated. I go back to Tsugaru one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished. I think it was 12 or 13 hours. And after that, we went to Molokai. And Molokai, now that more people are doing it, and all the shark encounters is the big thing. Now, the big thing there are the jellyfishes. They're the worst jellyfishes. And that swim taught me about self-doubt, because I started swimming in a very calm sea. And as night came in, totally different than what happens in Catalina, the wind picked up and the wind picked up and the wind picked up. And there was moments where I can see the boat. The boat is usually in front of you there. And I can see the kayak because the waves were so big. And after 10 hours of swimming, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, I go to the boat and I ask my coach and my doctor, how am I doing? I mean, how far have we gone? And I said, you haven't gone even 50%. You're only about 40% of your swim. So here we go again with First English Channel. And so I said, I have to deal with this. I mean, I had self-doubt that I could do it. I knew I could swim 18 hours, but that had been 17 years back. And so I'm 17 years older. And I said, Mom, I'm just going to go to my slowest Ironman, then to my First English Channel, 18 hours and 19 minutes. And when I got there, I said, I have two options. I can swim for another 40 minutes, get out at 19 hours and tell everybody that I've done my longest swim, or change the way I was looking at the problem. And usually when you're having self-doubts, it's because you are recurring thinking the same thing all the time, the same way. So I said, well, let's think 5 or 6 hours. What is that? Oh, that's a weekend workout. So instead of thinking about 24 hours, I thought, well, I just need to do a weekend workout. And I finished in 23 hours and 18 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So the warm swims are over, and now comes the cold.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that I would train for a year in an aquatic park at the South End Rowing Club, the greatest club in the earth. In November, I said, I think I'm ready, but I'm not. How can I know if I'm ready? Okay. Do you know Dan Simonelli?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've spoken. Yep.
You spoke with him, Dan?
Yeah.
Ah, Dan is very, very good friends. He's my kayaker. He's my official kayaker.
Official, yeah.
So Dan had done the year before a Catalina swim the same weekend, the same day that the first swim was done on January 15th.
I remember that, yeah.
So I called him and I said, how did that go? He said, well, it's going to be 14 degrees. There will be a lot of wind. It's going to be complicated. But the most complicated thing is you will need to talk to Forrest Nelson and the people at the Catalina Swimming Federation, because that goes against all the things that they have. I mean, nobody wants to do January. So, the process starts in April. So I called Forrest and I called Dershowitz. I said, I want to do this. I mean, I'll comply to all your requirements, the medical requirements and all of that. And I filled out the forms and I got a boat and everything. And on December 24th, I remember, I tell my coach, my team, it's a big team, I have a surprise for you. I'm doing Catalina on January 15th. And they got so upset.
Oh, no.
why were you taking a risk? You have a cook in March, and then you have the North Channel in August. You've already done, at that time, I had already done, I think, like, 4 times Catalina. So I said, and this is what the lesson about Catalina in the winter is, you gotta take risks in your life.
Mm.
And taking risks will show you whether you were right or you were wrong. If you were right, you're happy. It was worth it. And if not, you learn where your deficiencies are. And you learn that what else you need to do. So we went and I did it in 14 hours and 25 minutes. 4 hours longer than my best swim. And I was ready for cold weather. So we went to Cook. And Cook is something that taught me that if I hadn't had the mental training, and this is very important in open water swimming. Open water swimming, it's 80% mental, 20% physical. You need to train for the 100%, but it's mental. And I started, when you see the pictures of Cook in my presentations, it's flat. So Philip tells me, the captain, tells me that we have about 14 hours, the window, because after that, a big storm is coming in. So I start swimming in a very nice, calm sea. And by hour 7th or 8th, the wind starts. And you're going from the North Island to the South. And suddenly, I am doing parallel swim. Because the currents in the wind are so hard that if I keep going like that way, I'm going to be missing. And I'm going to miss the island. I mean, totally. That change in how I was preparing myself for the swim, and that I had to totally change my mind in a couple of minutes. It's like going downhill, and suddenly you realize there is a big climb. Well, that was it. And you have to react to that and adjust to that. So I finish, and there's only one left, the North Channel. So I go to Don Agati, and I said, I'm going to be there for 3 weeks. I need to get used to it. And the window opens, and bad weather. They tried to take somebody out one day. When you saw that was really beautiful, they take him out. Had to come back after 6 hours. And this is a Wednesday. And the captain comes and tells me, Antonio, I don't think it's going to be able. If you can go to sleep tonight, I will look at the weather all night long. And if I see there's a window, I'll come and tell you tomorrow. But you have to go to bed with that. So I went to bed and I really slept very, very well. I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I went for a walk. And it was raining and it was windy. And I said, we'll see what happens. So I told Rafa, my coach, that we will do everything that we do as if we were going to go. And so he was doing our warm-up and doing our bands and stuff like that. And he arrives with now the secretary of the North English, the North Channel Swimming Association, Mark Hamilton, and Nelson, the captain. And he said, Antonio, I've looked at the weather. You can have bad weather for about 3 or 4 hours. But after that, it looks good. If you trust me, then we're ready. I said, we have a deal. So in less than 30 minutes later, I was doing the North Channel. And I enjoyed the North Channel. And you know, what I told people is that we all have fears. But people don't want to admit that they have fears. And for me, my fear was cold water. I mean, I'm living in Mexico. I mean, Mexican beaches are never cold. Yeah. Mexico City is not cold.
You've done the training, though. You spent time in the Bay Area. You did Catalina in the winter, so you were ready.
But I was afraid. You had to do the process. And when I tell people, it's when you're afraid about something, you have to work on what you're afraid of. You just kind of ignore it. And that's how I finish Ocean 7. But the epilogue is that, Adam Skolnick? Adam Skolnick is a writer for the New York Times. And he's probably, he likes adventures, writing about adventures. And I had met him by telephone that year because, you know, Kimberly Chambers.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of her.
Kim and I organized a swim in, on the 5th of May. We went from the border because when Trump had the thing about the wall, and Adam interviewed me, and I told him what I was doing, and he said, well, let me know when you're going to the North Channel. And I said, well, I called him. I said, well, I talked to my editor in the New York Times and want to do a piece. And they sent a photographer. And I said, I cannot guarantee that I'm going to finish. I mean, I just tell your editor that. And I said, I want to talk to your editor and that he understands that there's a chance. It's not something that I can guarantee. And I talked to him. He said, but he's a very nice guy. So I finish, and Adam tells me, I'll submit my story, but don't have many hopes that it's going to be run. You know, it's an open water swimming. Why would that be more important than whatever was happening in the world? So this is Thursday, Friday. Saturday, Usain Bolt loses for the first time in the 100-meter dash. And I miss my plane because of changing of schedule. And I had to stay in London on Saturday and fly to Houston.
Oh, goodness.
Mexico. So I turned my phone off, getting on the plane. And we arrive in Houston, I turn it on, and my WhatsApp is going crazy. Friends I haven't heard in many, many years congratulate me, and I say, what is happening? And I see them in the front page of the Sunday Sports of the New York Times.
Wow.
I'm a bigger story than Usain Bolt losing. And I always tell us, as an epilogue, I never thought I was going to be front page in the New York Times. And we should talk to Adam. Adam is great. I mean, he's a swimmer. He's an open water swimmer.
Awesome.
Not very good swimmer, but he's an open water swimmer. Don't tell him I said that. But it's really interesting on how it will be really interesting for your audience on how does a writer see the event.
Yeah.
And I think when I saw Steven last week, we swam together in La Jolla, and he's going back to SCAR, and he told me he had just spoken to Adam and that he might be at SCAR again this year.
Oh, fun. I'll be at SCAR. I'll see them.
Are you swimming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah, wow.
Thank you for recapping the learnings from each of those swims. That was really great to hear. You kind of started by saying, I have hyperactivity and the water is medicine for me. Can you explain, I guess, what it's like for you, maybe out of the water and in the water, just so we can help understand that?
Yeah. When I'm in the water is when I feel the freest in my life. And I feel free for many, 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 well, several reasons. Number one, this possibility of floating and moving at different speeds, enjoying the perception of your body, that it hurts, that doesn't hurt. You know, when you're in the ocean, looking at sunrises, at sundown, looking at animals. So that is a big part. And in the ocean, you know, the only thing you're going to find is waves and wind. And nothing else. Yeah. Unless you're in Manhattan. I mean, when you're training, you immerse yourself in a different world. Number two, as I said, it's very important for my health because my family has a story of diabetes and hypertension. I'm a hypertensive person. I've been for 15 years. And the doctor tells me that what really helped me not getting a heart attack was that I always did sports.
Mm.
And the other day, something happened that made me think why I still love so much to swim. You know, when you're in the pool, you're always racing people and bugging people, bullying people, stuff like that. And this is when I'm a teenager, when you're a kid, okay? And the other day, I don't know what I did to somebody. And I guess, you know, it was the last 100 and I just passed them or something like that. And she got very upset. And I said, Antonio, you just behave like a teenager. You are incredible. And when I'm in the water, in the pool especially, I don't have to think myself as an old adult having to behave because I'm a businessman or a politician that I've been in my life. I mean, in the pool, I can do whatever I want. It's probably the only place that I can do the thing. Well, not with my granddaughter. I don't behave that well anymore. But you know, with my granddaughter, we both misbehave at the same place when we go to swimming lessons. I'm my granddaughter's. I convinced the people at the pool that I want to be her teacher. I said, yes, Antonio. So the other day they told me, look, I mean, this space of the pool is for you and Aurelia, because you don't follow anything that we say here. I said, we won't follow. I mean, we'll come here as a time for enjoyment for her, for me. And so we do crazy things. I mean, we'll jump into the pool together and I throw her up. And you can be a kid when you're in the water.
Yeah.
And that's my relationship with the water.
That's great. I wanted you to touch on one other thing that you mentioned was in your training, you were talking about training for marathons and finding the concentration. And if you knew that you could concentrate, that you knew you'd be able to swim. And I just kind of wanted you to dig into that one a little bit, just because I think it's a really important part of, you know, the kind of training that we do, both mentally, you know, as well as physically.
Yeah. You know what happens is that training for a marathon, what I have experienced is that, especially when you go to the track or when you do the long runs, the 32, 36 kilometer runs, you are dead. You are totally dead. But you know, it's a different kind of hurting. It's totally different. I mean, when you're swimming and you're swimming, I don't know, an hour at your top speed, before your arms are tired, your stomach is tired. I mean, your stomach is just hurting so much. So at least for me, it's hurting so much that you have to endure both things. You have to be able to, how do you transfer that capacity to make the pain go away? And being outside the water, it's a little bit easier than doing in the water. So when I did that, I wanted to see if I was able to do that, then I could go to the next step, which is the water. Having said that, another important thing that I've learned, and this is something that I learned from two people before my coach decided that we were going to do it, is, do you know Penny Palfrey?
I've heard of her, yeah.
Penny Palfrey is it's a great swimmer. She only missed one, the North Channel, twice. That's why she couldn't finish the Ocean 7. She lives in a beautiful place in Australia. And one day I was talking to her. We coincided in La Jolla, and we're both at the bathtub. And we started chatting. She just had finished her double, her second triple crown. I think she's the third one or the fourth one who did it. She was the second one who finished that. And I asked her, how do you train? I mean, living in Australia, how you do? I said, you know, I come as you do, I come here, but I'm doing something that you're not doing. I go in and out of the water. I go like 4 hours and I go out and then I come back to the water. And a very, very experienced long-distance coach, Tadeusz Kepka, he was from Poland, one day told me, why don't you do those kinds of training? He was a great coach for marathon running. And what we do now, our biggest challenge during the season is the 24-hour swim in May.
Mm-hmm.
I go in and out for 24 hours.
Oh, wow.
That's a big training. And that's a mental training. And then Simonelli and Rafa Alvarez, who's my coach, they play tricks on me, like waking me up before the time or you know, trying to make more difficult. If it wasn't difficult to swim that, that's something that you don't do in marathon. But marathon, you need a level of concentration that is the first step to going into open water swimming. And that's something that I've learned. Now, when you read the book, in chapter 12, I talk about what I do with the mind and my mind training. And, for example, it was very important for the North Channel, very important. The way you imagine things and being able to warm your body. And now that I'm doing longer swims, you know, when I did the double Catalina, there was a lot of pain. Manhattan, geez, there wasn't no pain at all. But Catalina, I suffer in Catalina. And the other thing, now that we're talking about pain and things, and this was very difficult for me, but it was a very big step, not only in swimming, but in my life, is being able to say, I cannot. And I train, and that's probably when Steven wanted us to first meet. I trained for a year to achieve the double English Channel. And I didn't know I had a gallstone. And so I had pancreatitis. And I started swimming with that. And after 2 hours, I started throwing up. I mean, nothing could go into my stomach. I landed in France at Cap Grenet, right under the light. And then coming back at night, I started hallucinating. And I started having hypothermia. And Rafa calls me to the boat and tells me, you know, you still have about 3 hours, 3-4 hours, and you're not looking good. But I've talked to the captain, and we've decided that you will have the last word. And I swam for another hour. I swam for 23 hours and something, 88 kilometers, and I just couldn't move anymore. And I said, I'm done. And after that, I went to the hospital for a week.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh.
For pancreatitis. I mean, it was not for
right, sleep, right.
For anything else. It was just something that I asked my doctor, what the odds that would happen again? I said, don't worry. I mean, you're outside. You would be really, really, really the unluckiest person in the world that would happen to you again. But you have to be able to say, I can't.
Yeah.
And when you're able to say, I can't, it gives you freedom because you can try it. And it's very difficult when you say I failed. And so I called Steven. I said, this is what happened. And I said, don't think it's a DNF, did not finish. Because if you look at it, that's not what happened. And he coined the phrase, did not fail.
Mm. Love it.
Typical Steven.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a podcast to round it up. And it was probably one of the ones that had the most viewers, over 4,000, I think.
Oh, wow.
That's an important lesson.
It is a very important lesson.
You don't fail. I mean, you don't fail. You just don't fit in. It's just, you have to say, I can. And that's not failing. Okay? And it's very important how you look at it because, and I came to Mexico, it was the first time I didn't finish something, and I was a lot of expectations that I would do it at 62. And the first question many people ask me is, how do you feel? I said, I feel very happy. It's my third English channel. I mean, I know I just need to wait until I can get a new spot. And I have a spot for next year. And I will go back and most probably I will finish. But it's not a big problem.
That's awesome. That was really, really great. I think it's an excellent note to close on. Thank you very much for your time and sharing your story today, Antonio.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you were inspired by even just a moment of this story, please share it with a friend. You never know what might push someone out of their comfort zone so that they can find out what they're capable of. And please leave a review with your podcast provider. It truly helps others discover the raw and honest stories of these amazing endurance swimmers. Thanks for listening.